This is Comic Potpourri. This is Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And today we're going to do a...
Kind of freestyling it today, so that's the idea. So, but I think Paul hit a really good call.
We're going to do DC versus
Marvel.
And yep. the characters, yeah. So let's start with the obvious.
Okay.
First one, Superman.
Superman. Okay, so this is a DC character created in, what, like 1937, I believe, for Action Comics, number one.
I'll do the DC. You can do the Marvel.
I can totally do Marvel for sure. So you go for
1941, he was, when World War II came and all this, he was big. I mean, he was like, they had a lot of different cartoons and stuff. And I don't know if people knew this, but in during that time, that's how a lot of people learned how to read, was through the comics. So comics in our history is very important. You know, that's what the servicemen would read, Sad Sack and Superman and all that. They would get comics when they're in the field, which was a morale booster.
It kind of makes a lot of sense because it gives them the verbiage that goes along with the intonation. When you look at the image, like, this is the character reacting to something that's been said.
Right.
And so people start to, oh, this is the way I might want to react. And it's not just kids, but as Paul just mentioned, servicemen. Also, we're trying to be entertained, which is the other thing, because war is never a pleasant thing,
no.
Period. I mean, really, in all honesty, how many guys, war is maybe glorified from the general public.
But then we get to the comics, and it is glorified.
It is glorified.
But in a way that we're going, wow, you know, that's not, you know, Superman's not going to kill anybody. He really doesn't.
No, he never does.
He's like, you know, he's the good Batman.
And I think, like, when Batman originally comes out and so on like that, he basically is like, he's the epitome of the American dream. Or
that's
what
right.
The idea that they were.
Well, that he was a vigilante. Anyway, let's get to Superman. Superman had super hearing. He could fly. He had heat vision. He could, he had X-ray vision, which Lois found out.
Don't look, Clark. falling out of the window, and I don't want you to see how the wind resistance
The yellow
goes.
Sun is what gave him his strength.
Correct.
So when he was out in the sun, and he was faster than a speeding bullet, can jump over tall buildings in a single bound.
If you watch the TV show.
Faster than a speeding crane.
Yep. Changed the course of a mighty river.
That's right. And he can, well... Let's stay with the comics, not with the movies.
Sorry, I got pulled into that one. But in the comics, however, for counterpoint, Marvel actually has their Superman character. But it didn't... there was a character in Marvel Comics about 10 years ago by the name of the Century is what the character is called. And the reason why he was... He existed during the same time at the very beginning of the superhero genre for Marvel Comics, but for whatever reason, they forgot him. And the writer of that particular story, which I can't remember right off the top of my head, had created the character because if you were to remember this character, it would bring back his ultimate villain at the same time. So the Century basically had a mental...
He was nuts.
Aberration was the word I was going to go for, but that's okay.
Well, he's nuts. He goes crazy.
Yeah. How would you like to be the primary psychologist for a superhero? How would you deal with that?
Oh, no.
They actually did
you know
for
what?
A little bit in Marvel Comics.
It would have to be a sports psychologist.
Well...
for the egos.
So in Marvel, they actually had a character like that named Doc Samson. He was a derivative, and he had actually infused himself with a smaller gamma burst, unlike what happened to the Hulk
right.
When that bomb went off, the gamma bomb that affected Bruce Banner. And so Doc Samson came in and actually was a psychologist initially trained, and then he got irradiated by a smaller dose of gamma radiation, and he was psychological. Thank you. For the Hulk.
Yeah.
And Bruce Banner. And finding out that there's two divisions in his memory. But the Century is a completely different kind of character.
The comics show you how he becomes. The movie's a little bit different.
Oh, totally.
Totally.
Different.
So, and just to let you know, in the in coming up in this is 2025. The Sentry is going to be in the movie.
He is, and I'm kind of curious to see how they're going to play that one off. It's going to be interesting.
It's going to be really interesting. So let's go off the next one. I mean, Superman. Okay, so he has Lois Lane. He has Crypto. He has
the Wonder
Dog. Yeah,
which is really kind of wild. But okay, cool.
Yeah, and he comes from a different planet, from Krypton, and from a rocket. And
his parents have been killed in a massive planetary accident, and he's been sent off into space. And he's sent off to a planet with a yellow sun where he will be irradiated by a yellow sun in his light and will be super strong.
So, but what happens is, too, is like in the comics, there he has so much stuff when he puts the, when he makes the of Solitude, the Fortress of Solitude, he has all this stuff that is actually from Krypton.
Yeah.
I mean, he has the little, it's so cool. He has that little city with all those little people in it and stuff.
Oh, yeah. That?
And then he has different areas, and then he can go back and see what was happened, you know, how his family was or whatever. So he's from that. And that crystal, those crystals and stuff, not like in the movies, this thing actually made the whole thing, and it's pretty cool. And he had a giant key that he'd have to lift and undo the lock.
Oh, God, yeah, that's right. He did have that huge...
And he had so many evil persons, but the biggest one was...
Lex Luthor.
Right. And so he had his evil nemesis, where Sentry had what?
Sentry didn't have anything. He had an alternate version of himself. It was kind of like a positive and negative in a lot of ways. But the Sentry could do pretty much everything Superman could do. Now, as a side note, okay, there are a number of other comic book companies that have come up with their variations of Superman.
Right.
Should be mentioned here just briefly. So you have the series called Invincible, which has a character in it. There was Image Comics, they had a character called Mr. Majestic, which was which is another Superman-esque type character.
Oh, and talk about that. Superman did have an opposite, Bizarro.
Oh, the Bizarro Superman, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Me Bizarro.
For most people who are more associated with TV and so on like that, you'd also have The Boys, which is a Garth Ennis book that has the he's super gnarly.
The one with the American, yeah, he's weird.
He's just weird.
I won't even go into this weird.
The show is a little bizarre, but in the comics, there are alternates for every single Superman variant, and they actually have had multiple AI things on online that have these guys all duke it out with each other. Yeah. And it's just like, and the Hulk is actually involved in this because he is so incredibly strong.
Right.
But he doesn't have the brain capacity that Superman has. He doesn't have that high focused intellectual capability of a Kryptonite, person.
And Hulk. Smash.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all right, you're the most basic of all of these, okay. And you're incredibly strong and incredibly powerful, yet you don't have the brains for it. And that's where Professor Hulk's situation kind of comes in.
It changes. There's like, Hulk. Let's talk about the Hulk, okay? Comparison to DC, have to either be Superman again.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That's it.
S-Man's going to come out on top.
Yeah.
I really believe that is like, if you had an all-out battle between just the Hulk and Superman, Superman's going to come out on top. Sentry might be able to, but I think because of this alternate version of himself, which I forget what they call it. It was like the darkness or something like that, or the void.
Right.
I think that's what they called it. This would work against him. So every single time, Supes is going to come out on top.
Yeah. Well, he has so many powers, and he's like, oh,
way to go, Kyle.
Like we said, Hulk ends up, oh my gosh, there's the Red Hulk. There's the is it Professor Hulk?
Professor Hulk, yeah.
There's the regular one. There's the gray one.
Joe Fixit.
Oh my God!
Which is supposed to address a coloring error that happened in the Hulk comic book years and years ago, because it was easier to reprint the color gray than it was the color green. And then apparently the Hulk was turned gray. And then they actually, Todd McFarlane and a couple of David Michelin had come up with the story of like addressing the gray Hulk in the comics. And they termed the character Joe Fixit. Then he ended up being a bouncer and freaking,
he had
like,
fix. They had to fix him.
He was Joe Fixit. He was a guardsman. He was working in Las Vegas of all places.
God.
It's like, come on, a strong man working for the mob? Seriously? Joe Fixit?
The next one would be Batman. Batman, I don't know, would be Marvel.
Okay, so there are two different characters for Marvel that work counterpoint for this. One would be Daredevil, a.k.a. Matt Murdock, because he's working in a more of a grungy inner city kind of situation.
Vigilante, yeah.
And then you have the character Moon Knight.
But now, Moon Knight is a little bit different.
No, here's my reason for Moon Knight. Okay, so Moon Knight is also a millionaire in his own right. He's got the money to build all these weapons and devices to help him out. Unlike Tony Stark. I mean, he's just using his fists against all these thugs out in New York City and so on.
They beat him up when he's little.
Why is New York City the central point for all these people?
You mean Gotham?
Sure.
Well, that's exactly what. If you go to New York, they actually call it Gotham.
Do they really?
Yes, they do.
I've never heard that before. That's wild.
I've seen on the news. Well, yeah, here in Gotham, I'm like, what show are you on? What cartoon are you from?
Yeah, what universe are you trying to channel right now? Okay, knock it off.
So Batman had, oh my gosh. So even though he's a millionaire, his motivation is what kept him going. And he did have things, but then he had all that training,
mm-hmm.
and he had some major people that were always trying to get him.
Always.
So Joker's number one.
Joker's the number one because he's trying to figure out what the Joker's up to or thinking. His number two, in most cases, would be the Riddler in this particular case, because the Riddler is trying to use his intellectual powers. The Penguin.
Yeah.
Penguin. Yeah.
Right. Stop channeling Burgess Meredith.
No, I'm not. Get out of here, Penguin.
Penguins don't even sound like that, at least as far as I understand, anyway.
Riddle me this.
Yeah, exactly. And then there you have Catwoman.
Well, Cat. Perfect. And there's, So Catwoman. And then he had all these other ones. He had Two-Face. He had
Clayface.
Clayface. And then he had...
I think these are all those particular names alone are derivative of another comic book character that was out at the time, Dick Tracy. So that character had a number of characters that had their names based off of the way they looked and the way they were depicted, like Flat Top.
And that was not a Marvel. I don't even think
that wasn't even a
DC, was
no,
it?
No, neither one of them. It was a cartoon strip, I think, in King Features, I think.
Yeah.
And so,
Flat Top. What was there? There wasn't a...
Oh, God.
Something Face, Scarface. You could just, they had all these other ones.
The brow.
Yeah, the brow.
Something like that.
Which is like just a brow.
Yeah, that's all it is. I was like, oh, man.
You know, and they're all from Jersey.
Because the Garden State likes to crop that stuff. No offense to you guys in Jersey.
No.
I love you guys. I went out with a gal from Trenton. Okay?
It's just a cartoon because they made fun of certain people in certain areas, like people from New York, New Jersey.
The way that you would depict a person before a lot of other things came up, you could depict a person based upon their genealogy in some cases, which we don't try to do anymore at all, I hope.
Okay, I'm gonna go back.
Yeah.
And it's not a Marvel. I thought it was Marvel, but it cannot be because I think it was a Brands.
Oh.
The Watchmen.
Oh, okay. So
Mystery,
that's a
Mr. Universe.
They're,
or what,
they're,
is that what his name, Mr. Universe?
The Watchmen are a derivative of the Charlton characters for the comics, by the way. Charlton was a big company for a long time.
Right. And if you look at it, I'm going, okay, they got this guy named the Owl who flies an owl machine, who has a cowl. I'm like, that's Batman.
Totally Batman. Okay, so a little background on that particular character, or that whole universe. Let's put it that.
Yeah.
So the Watchmen, which was put out by DC, DC had acquired all the character rights for all these different characters for the Charlton comics books group, like the Question,
right?
A number of other characters, which they had their version of the Atom, which DC had. Charlton had their character of Batman, had their version of Wonder Woman, a.k.a. Miss Jupiter,
right.
And so on.
Yeah, they had all that stuff.
Charlton had...
Justice League.
Yes.
Yeah. The version of a Justice League.
Right. But as the comics companies evolved over the decades from the 1940s through the 1960s, a lot of those other companies like Charlton and Ace, Archie, Gold Key, a number of these companies were dying off, but their properties were still out there as intellectual properties. So the bigger companies swooped in and picked some of these characters up.
Right.
Okay. And a good chunk of those characters went to DC, but they were in kind of a comics limbo, if you will. Which,
that's because Marvel was not strong at that time.
No, the only thing that really saved Marvel in a lot of ways, believe it or not, was reprinting a bunch of Robert E. Howard's comic stuff for Conan the Barbarian. And the subsequent Robert E. Howard properties, such as Red Sonja, which is a reason why, if you hear that name, you associate Red Sonja with the scantily clad, red-haired barbarian in the chainmail bikini. No, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
Right? And then you have Cole the Conqueror, which is where the character Thalusa Doom comes from, which the movies equated into Conan the Barbarian, the movie, side note. And so a lot of the pulp characters of the 1930s, Marvel had latched onto and was reinventing themselves as well as keeping the company going. On the other side of that, DC had been doing their own thing for the longest time, but they still had these characters from Charlton. And
right.
Then you have the one person in 1986 come over to DC from Britain by the name of Alan Moore. Okay. He says, you got any characters I can work with? He's already been working on the character of the Swamp Thing. And the Saga of the Swamp Thing was a character that had been created for a long time by Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson.
I would say, okay, instead of the Hulk against Superman, I would say the Hulk against the Swamp Thing.
Why would you say that?
Because of what the Swamp Thing can do.
Paul, you ignorant bastard. Just going to call you out on that one. Okay, so Marvel actually has their variation of the Swamp Thing. In the 1970s, they came up with a character called the Man-Thing.
I know, yes.
Okay.
Totally rip off. I mean, it's so funny because they ripped off each other.
But
so.
The funny thing is that both characters ripped off another character that's actually in the public domain called the Heap.
The Heap.
The Heap. The character the Heap is a character that at some point Eclipse had acquired the rights for. But
right.
But because the characters are public domain, they have to say who owns the character initially or created the character. So the Heap was a combination of what the Man-Thing was and the Swamp-Thing that are separated by the two companies and was melded in together. So you had a character who was affected by a super soldier serum, which is a very popular thing, but you can't copyright super soldier serum.
No.
Anybody can use it.
Whoa, yeah, I wonder who used a lot of that.
Everybody.
So, but the Swamp-Thing, think of that. He could get hit, but then it'd go through him because he was the Swamp. I mean,
he's a plant elemental.
He controlled the Swamp.
That's the way the character was originally created.
Yeah.
When Alan Moore came in, he changed the character vastly. He Okay, so for the longest time from the 1970s through the 1980s or so, Alec, or the Swamp Thing, believed itself to be this human character named Alec Holden, who had created this super soldier serum. There were some outside influences that blew up his laboratory in the Louisiana swamp.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
That sounds like a great place to have a laboratory, but okay, whatever.
It's hidden. It's a hidden laboratory.
Okay, anyway, so I had to stretch that one out. His laboratory is in a swamp. It blows up because of a bomb that Alec Holland finds. He gets caught on fire. He's been imbued with all these chemicals.
He jumps in to get himself out. Yeah,
and he puts himself out by jumping into the swamp. And at that point, he goes unconscious. And when he rises up, he's imbued with all this swampiness. I'm sorry. I don't know what else to call it. Swampiness. Into himself, but he can't talk because he's a plant more than he is a human being.
Yeah.
But he's got the brain of a human being.
Got the brain of a human, but he controls the plant. He can actually, later on, I don't know the beginning, but later on he could actually go around the world, supposedly.
Okay.
Control the plants.
I can name this one right off the top. It's Saga of the Swamp Thing, Volume 2, Number 17. Anatomy of a... It's a destruction of an anatomy. And Alan Moore comes in from Britain, and he rewrites the entire history of the Swamp Thing. And they've kept it ever since.
Yeah.
So it's a plant thinking it's Alec Holland, not the other way around.
Right.
Here we go. The counterpoint. You have the Man Thing. Comes out roughly about the same time as the Swamp Thing because Marvel realizes, oh, we got this character that's really popular. It's being drawn by a really fantastic illustrator by Bernie Wrightson. Great guy, by the way. If you've never met him, you're lost, unfortunately. One of the nicest guys you would ever meet in your life. I had the opportunity of meeting Bernie Wrightson not once, but twice in my life. Fantastic illustrator, by hands down. I like to think of myself as a pretty good illustrator nowadays. And I'm closing in on 60. Bernie was doing it in his 20s.
Right.
He was working for the Baltimore Herald doing political cartoons. He's a fantastic illustrator. Anyway, but the Man Thing comes out. It's drawn by Mike Ploog. And the Man Thing has a very basic setup for his origin story. And so the biggest difference between him and the Swamp Thing is that if anything sees fear or is imbued by fear, the Man Thing's immediately brought to their attention and he will literally physically burn them. I mean, there's something in the chemical touch,
right?
And he will just burn them. Most people might have seen the latest Disney show called The Werewolf by Night. Was
it
Halloween?
Great movie, I
really wish they would go with that storyline a little bit further.
Oh,
black and white was fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I loved it. And their version of the Man Thing was way better than the standalone movie that was put out by, I don't know, Fox years ago called The Man Thing.
Yes, it was awful.
Terrible.
It was really awful.
Terrible.
Ugh. Which proves my point.
What? No. Nah. All right. So there is another outstanding character that we should mention. Now, you mentioned earlier. So you have one character by the name of the Plastic Man.
Yes. The
DC.
Plastic Mr. Elastic. Well, that's the name for somebody else. But yeah. Mr. Plastic Man. But they called him Mr. Elastic in some of the cartoons.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Elastic Man is what they call at one time. Or like, I just remember also they all, his nicknames were like Rubber Man and all these other.
Okay, yeah.
So, Plastic Man.
Plastic Man is.
Which is cool. He had the glasses, the sunglasses, the one suit. He can, like, whee!
Yeah, he can change into anything he wanted to.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure exactly. In 1962, there's a little known group that came to be. You may have heard of them. The Fantastic Four?
Great comics, but they can't make a movie. Those guys can't act.
Even with a new movie coming up, I've heard not so great things, but that's just what I've heard.
Yeah, well, I think there's a curse on it.
I think so. And
curse
I think
you, Fantastic Four.
You know who cursed him? Probably Doctor Doom. He's a sorcerer as well as a... As
Galactus
a,
did.
Oh. Oh, my God. Snap the fingers. Galactus okay. can hold
yeah,
all those...
Galactus and who else?
Thanos.
Yeah.
Snap the fingers. Oh, you changed the time frame again. God.
We're confusing you because there's all these...
Multiverses.
Multiverses, and they're like... One comic character does the same thing in something else, and it's really strange. But that's that. That's how Marvel does it. They're just all confused.
So, all right. So, if I'm going to do a really quick rundown, you could name different characters versus each other.
Right.
So, okay. So, if you have, like, DC. Okay, DC even parodied their own characters. So, you have yeah. somebody like Superman, going back to the first right. character we talked about, the Martian Manhunter. But his weakness wasn't kryptonite.
No.
It was fire. Just fire. And he and John Jones.
And he could change his look.
He could change his shape. He could read minds, which is something Superman has never been able to do.
Which is so funny. He's the last of his kind.
Last of his kind.
Just like Superman.
Bingo. But he's from Mars, so he's a little closer nearby.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the other characters you had mentioned briefly, who came first? Was it Aquaman or was it the Submariner?
Ooh, I think it was the Submariner came first. Yes,
correct.
It was.
Correct. Okay. Who's another character that comes out? Okay, so you have the character...
Oh, wait a minute. So the Marvel side, that's Namor.
Namor is the first one. So he comes out first.
Yeah.
You do not have a parallel for the Human Torch. There's not a character in DC that I know of that's on fire, except maybe Firestorm. But that's a completely different kind of character.
Oh, my God. See, that's Marvel, too.
And Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, yeah.
And the original Ghost Rider actually had a guy dressed up kind of like, think of the Lone Ranger, but in a ghost costume. It's all white. He's on a white horse attacking in the Wild West.
Okay. Another comparant. Here's one that's really easy. Green Arrow and...
Hawkeye.
Basically the same.
They're exactly the same, but Green Arrow precedes Hawkeye.
DC, they all wear costumes.
Yeah, well, and here's another character that...
With their underwear on the outside.
Right. But you have Green Arrow mirroring or is a derivative of Batman in a lot of ways.
Right.
Again, like just like when you're talking about the Martian Manhunter, you have Green Arrow. And
as
he's
always.
Mirroring Batman because these characters, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, eventually, would be pulled into more of the popular consciousness of society, and they'd have their own TV shows, cartoons, so on. So you had to, in the comics, you had to separate those characters. So you had your A-tier superheroes in DC, and you needed to have somebody replace them in the comic books.
Right.
So instead of Batman, you have Green Arrow. Instead of Superman, you had John Jones. You know, you had all these backups.
The Flash, but you understand the Flash today, there is like three different Flashes.
Correct.
The first one is
okay, so you have Barry.
Barry Allen.
Barry Allen. Then you have Wally West.
Right. Well, it's the first one.
Well, Barry Allen, right?
No. When they first drew him, he had wings. And the helmet.
Oh, so, all right. So
he, looked like the Mercury guy on FDD.
Initially, okay, so it should be stated that during the time between the 1950s and the 1960s, a lot of the original 1940s character that Paul's mentioning did have the Flash. The Green Lantern is another
right.
one.
Yeah.
Hawkman.
Hawkman and Hawk Girl.
Hawk Girl, yeah. And you had Batman, you had Superman, you had Wonder Woman that were all part of this group of people. And you had the original Flash. There were a number of derivative characters off of that particular character. I'm trying to remember the character's name, but for whatever reason it escapes me right now. So you had this character, the Flash,
right?
And Barry Allen becomes it, and then Wally West becomes the Flash later on,
right?
Okay, so you have three variations. DC had these characters, and they revamped them.
Yeah, they
did. The 1960s. Marvel's idea was, well, we're going to continue on with those particular characters, so we are going to have Namor. We're going to have Captain America. We're going to have the Human Torch come back into our universe.
Right.
Now, Captain America and Namor are basically exactly the same. The Human Torch, however, instead of being a construct like they did in the 1940s, actually is a human character, but he's changed by the cosmic rays of the sun and stuff like that when the Fantastic Four takes off to try to get to the moon.
Okay, remember, this is they're in the early,
1962. So Marvel's revamping some of their superhero characters, and they're trying to get away from a lot of their romance books and so on like that between the 1950s, because there was a huge act done by the 1950s and the Comics Code Authority. They revamped some of their superheroes, but the Human Torch is one of the weird ones because it's imbued by an actual human being as opposed to an android. That character's name was Jim Hammond, and he was a sentient robot. In 1940, you had an android. Whoever even heard of that term before? But they called them the Human Torch.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a crack in his tubule exposed to the oxygen, and he ignited. But for whatever reason, he could stay ignited, but it wouldn't hurt him physically. In the comic books for the Fantastic Four, Johnny Storm imbues the idea because he had a fascination with the original Human Torch from the 1940s. And for whatever reason, plus him being a hothead, ridiculous stuff, right? Johnny Storm imbues that into himself when he gets exposed to the cosmic rays.
DC had one that didn't he? Was that DC or Marvel? The one where the guy had his head on fire and he had superpowers.
I haven't heard that one.
Okay. I can see the comic. It was like this and it was in flames and stuff. So minor guy. I don't know if it was DC or Marvel or another brand.
We may have to do some deep lore digging on that one. I'm totally down for that, but okay. You have the Human Torch, right?
Human Torch, yeah.
But there's no DC parallel to that particular character. The Superhero Soldier Serum, was in both universes no matter what. So you had the Swamp Thing that was trying to experiment with that. They actually tried it in Marvel yet again. Nobody can incorporate that into it. So Captain America is a unique individual in that regard.
Right.
But he carries over. The one thing that was really cool about Cap was that during his time that he was in suspended animation, he had lost his memory of those prior adventures.
Right.
So he was starting off as a brand new character, but he existed previously. So he's expanding on those.
Again, it's not like the movie.
No. But in the 1960s, they brought him in, and they brought him into S.H.I.E.L.D. Because he's a U.S. asset, they incorporated him into S.H.I.E.L.D., and they threw him into a couple things that were taking place in Southeast Asia. They didn't say Vietnam particularly. Right. There was that implication going on there. The same goes with Iron Man. Here's another character that doesn't have an actual parallel in DC. There's a couple variations, but you've got a millionaire like Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Right. But instead of creating and being this pulp character, he creates a human armor that basically is supposed to keep him alive, but at the same time prevents other people from killing him in the process. And this is in Vietnam. Of course, we always had the bleed over of the movies coming in here. Okay. And that's fine. Now, let's take a look at some other parallels. Wait,
this is like reading your favorite book. If you've ever read Tolkien and you've read all those books and seen the movies, you're going, oh, they cut that out. No, they didn't. They did that, but this is cut out, like Tom Bombadil.
Oh, yeah. Tom Bombadil is the biggest one right off the top.
Yeah, that's cut out. And then it's like some other stuff, and you're like, oh, no, they cut it like a few chapters out. What's going on? Well, they have to because it's so big. But that's what's happening is that with the movies, they took liberties of changing things that are not initially in the comics.
Yeah. It should be mentioned that with creators versus producers.
Right.
Producers always want to have part of their vision recognized when they're making a big production because they have the amount of money
right
to pr- promote these things. Not just the actors, but also the director, cinematographer, editors, blah, 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 blah. All that numbers, groups of people, whatever. Comics,
right,
different situation. Here we go back to, again, so parallel. So we have already mentioned that you had the Hawkeye versus Green Arrow. So you, then you have the Green Lantern, but did you have a parallel for the Green Lantern in the Marvel Universe?
I don't think so.
There is, but I would say it's really derivative. So the character of Fing Fang Foom, because there's a number of rings, you're not supposed to, the Mandarin.
Right, the Mandarin.
Okay.
Yes,
opposite of Tony Stark. He's in Marvel, you have Iron Man, but then you have this magical alien aspect of the Mandarin who had all these 10 rings.
Isn't he Raoul in Batman?
Sure.
I mean, it's kind of, wouldn't you think that would be the same?
Ra's al Ghul?
Yeah.
Is that the character you're thinking of?
Yeah, Ra's al Ghul.
Kind of?
Yeah.
There's because a lot of weird cross-pollination going on.
Because I remember him
there.
Having almost like magical stuff too, and it's like, yeah.
When Batman was being trained, initially he's just a very well-trained boxer/fighter.
Right.
And then they started incorporating a lot of the martial arts big thing back in the 1970s. It's like everything is martial arts.
We were kung fu fighting.
Kung fu fighting. Yeah. Apologies. Great apologies on that one. There was a lot of that being incorporated into the Batman's background. That's was kind of retrofitted and don't know how the writers of the comic book at that time, Denny O'Neil, were able to incorporate a lot of that, as well as his being an actual detective.
Since you brought up like the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
And you kind of brought up some of the Avengers and stuff like that. Justice League, Avengers.
That's always a great... Now, to keep in mind, the All-Star Squadron was a DC group of people.
Right.
But Marvel didn't have a group of people like that. Fantastic Four was really...
It wasn't actually the Justice League. It was Justice...
Society.
Society.
Of America.
And that's when it had the old Flash. It had like a Wonder Woman in it.
Yep. Our Man.
Our Man.
He also brought in Catman.
Yeah.
Which is
like a Batman.
Bingo. But he was just an ex-wrestler/boxer.
Yeah, it was really weird. So they had that.
Cross martial arts. Oh, come on.
So they had
UFC
that.
UFC had Catman in mind.
Then it went to the Justice League.
Justice League.
And I would say Justice League versus Avengers. Justice League.
Here you have the Fantastic. You have the Fantastic Four initially comes out. They have their version of Plastic Man, a.k.a. Mr. Fantastic, which we didn't mention. But Mr. Fantastic is literally the only character in Marvel Comics. In DC, you have two variations of Plastic Man.
Right.
Plastic Man himself and the Elastic Man.
Right.
Or Elongated Man.
Elongated. No, let's say Elastic.
I like to think of myself as elongated.
The thing is, these guys were always, and for some reason, how DC wrote for these guys, they wrote them like they were like sense of humor, like, oh, yeah, oh, duh, you know. Type
but
of
whereas
thing.
Mr. Fantastic, on the other hand, was actually a much more of a big brainiac kind of character.
Yeah.
Which, in all honesty, so I'm just going to say this outright. If I were a alien or a governmental agency, you know what? I would have whacked Reed Richards right off the top because he caused so many problems for the Marvel Universe because of his great intellect. He brought in the negative zone, which imbued a lot of characters in the Marvel Universe to deal with, like Annihilus, Blastar, a number of characters from that universe. Galactus alone is probably the biggest threat to the Marvel Universe that they have ever felt, maybe except with the exception of the Dark Phoenix. And really, in all honesty, there's no character in the DC universe that mirrors the Dark Phoenix. Now, you also have Thanos as a villain for the Marvel Universe. You've got his counterpoint, which is Darkseid.
Right.
Okay? Those are two major components. You've got Zatanna. Her Marvel compatriot would be the Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, Zatanna, though, is like...
You
I, like, Scarlet Witch had these powers, pretty strong powers. Santana,
not so much. Okay, but then you have Mandrake, the magician. You got Doctor Strange. Doctor Fate.
Doctor Fate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you also have the Vision for Marvel. You've got the Red Tornado.
Right.
Both androids. Both can do a lot of crazy ass things. Again, with Marvel, you had. We were already talked about the original Flash, right?
Right.
At Marvel had their variation of that called the Whizzer. The name alone is wrong to begin with. The Whizzer. I feel like I'm channeling Pat, right?
That's the funny thing about Marvel, though, is that they had, unlike DC, just pretty well stuck. And I think that's the problem when they end up going back. They didn't go as strong. Is they stuck with the Justice League people. Right, so you have the Avengers, right? Then you had Fantastic Four, but they had another group. Marvel did.
They did. Now, if you're back in the mid early '70s to 1976, Marvel had another group of characters called the Invaders, which was at the top of.
There's another group.
World War II.
Right.
So that incorporated both Captain America, original Captain America, with Bucky. The original Human Torch with his character or sidekick, Toro, which is actually the first Human Torch. And then you had...
Toro means bull.
Don't flash that red flag in front of me.
Just thinking, yeah, that's probably what... Toro.
You're hot.
Oh, no. He's probably going, Toro, poo-poo. Toro, poo-poo. You know what that is, right? Bull.
Bull.
Yes.
Scheisse, for you German listeners out there.
Or shite.
You dumb cough. So you have these particular characters. It isn't until, literally, by the late 70s to early 80s that you start really having actual original characters being created at this time. You have the character of Bullseye for Marvel. The closest analogam character to that.
Deadshot?
Not so much. Deadshot would be the closest one, really, because they're both assassins. That's about it. You had the character, the Deathstroke, the Terminator.
Okay, yeah.
Alone, the Terminator, by the name alone, conjures the idea of the actual movie. But Deathstroke, the Terminator, is a two-faced, literally a two-faced character.
I forgot. I was thinking adults. Oh, yeah. I can tell you somebody who's really powerful.
Who?
Could end the world.
Raven. That's a twisted character all by herself.
Yes. It's not the Teen Titan Raven that we think of. It kind of is, but...
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
so what do you,
but her black... her if she goes black or bad, the world will end.
Where does this character show up at?
She's, she was in Teen Titans. Kind of has own comic now.
Raven was a really interesting character because initially she was an empath that had a demon father, from what I remember, correct? Trigon, I believe is his name.
Yeah.
He was the most powerful DC demon, where you had Mephisto for Marvel. Now, do you have a parallel in DC that parallels the Silver Surfer?
Wow, that's a good... Man.
See, yeah, I mean,
wow.
Like I say, when you get into the late, well, and
that's why I say DC at a certain point, kind of like Marvel just took over.
Yeah, Marvel during the 1980s was the strongest company.
Well, let's talk about another group in Marvel before that.
What?
One of the strongest.
X-Men?
Yes, of course.
Well, the X-Men definitely have a bunch of numbered characters. So you have... The original X-Men.
Original.
Angel. Okay, so you have Angel, Beast, Cyclops, Marvel Girl, and Iceman. That's the group
That's
of five.
Yeah, you didn't have Wolverine yet.
Well, Wolverine, none of those other characters came up until 76.
Well, and you had Doc, Professor.
Professor X was there. They had, DC had their variation of a wheelchair-bound individual called the Chief. He was for the Doom Patrol.
Oh, the Doom Patrol. Oh, my gosh.
That's always been DC's closest parallel to the X-Men as far as the way their stories initially came out, right? But at that point, you have a character for DC called the Negative Man. You've got Cliff Steele, a.k.a. Robot Man. Yeah. And then you got Elastigirl, which is Rita Farr. And that's it. And then you've got the Chief, Charles Calder, a.k.a. the Chief. And he's in charge of the Doom Patrol. In X-Men, you have a guy by the name of Charles Xavier. In his particular case, he's also a mutant who has mental capabilities, which Charles Calder does not. But they're both leading teams from a wheelchair. It's like the Iron Side of comics. Can you see Raymond Burr rolling around on his wheelchair? It's like, all right, Cyclops, go get him. Beast,
He's kind of breathy, though, isn't he, when he talks?
Raymond Burr?
You Raymond Burr.
He would be a little
Raymond
more.
Burr.
He's a little more breathy.
Yes.
He lets his breath carry forth the performance, not the actual words that are being said, which is unfortunate.
So the compliment there, I mean, again, I'd go, hate to say it, but X-Men.
Yeah,
you know,
X-Men.
Have to be.
Okay. Now, X-Men really, by the time the 1970s rolled around, X-Men was actually a title that was about ready to fold up shop. Len Wein, formerly mentioned of the Swamp Thing, came in and had another writer come in by the name of Chris Claremont in 1975 come in and revamp the whole idea of the X-Men. So the only existing X-Men was going to be Cyclops and Marvel Girl. The rest of the X-Men, Beast, Angel, and Iceman, were just basically sidelined for whatever reason. I have no idea what happened to him, right?
Angel was great. I thought he was... I was one of those...
He's an interesting character. But, I mean, you have a character that has angel wings. How far can you go with that?
Well, you know, he could fly.
Okay. In the mid-1980s, they did a revamp of that particular character and named him Archangel, and they really messed him up permanently. And it's another kind of a derivative Darkseid-type character that came in and totally changed Angel up and twisted Angel into something he is
not. Oh, here's the comparable, and I tell you what, I would take the Atom over Ant-Man.
The Atom's pretty cool, actually, as far as the character goes.
Because he can go, well, he didn't go into the quantum realm when he gets small. They call him the Atom, so he goes as small as the Atom.
To the point where you can't really see him, but I mean, he's small enough that he's, actually, Henry Pym, the character, not the actor played by Michael Douglas in the movie, but Henry Pym could actually reduce himself in size, but he also was a predominant scientist in Marvel to begin with anyway. So not only could he go incredibly small, but in the movies they also incorporated the fact that Henry Pym could actually enlarge himself, and they called himself Goliath. And that's
he got big,
yeah. Yeah, and that's the reason why you see Scott Lang change into this giant version during Civil War, grabbing a hold of Iron Man. It's like, whoa! And totally, it's like, does anybody got anybody else on this team that has some secret powers I don't know of? I think that was fantastic. That was one of the most hilarious things that Scott Lang did, and I thought it was great.
It's just strange because, you know, Marvel just produced more. I mean,
yeah,
DC just at the point they were just counting all their old or on their
old properties
to go further. And you see that now in the cartoons and stuff that's on TV. But
how, I mean, really, in all honesty, the Teen Titans, actually, Robin is literally the weakest character. He is the weakest character, but he is also the leader of it because he has had so much combat training with Batman, so he can direct who needs to do what. Okay, and he also dated one of the hottest chicks in the DC Universe, Starfire.
So, Cyborg.
Bastard.
Compliment Marvel Cyborg.
Okay, so the closest, actually, and in this particular case, Marvel wins out on this one with the first cybernetic character called Deathlok.
Okay. Yeah, I know who that is.
So Deathlok comes out in 1975, 76. What is it? Despotian. It's a despot kind of society.
Oh, dispos. Okay.
You know what the word I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, brain fart. So you have this worldview that in 1986, there's an alternate version where the world has gone basically to shit at the point. And in this case, Deathlok is a character who had been put in a deep freeze. His body is reanimated after being frozen, but his body is gotten bad. And they replace a lot of his human parts that have decomposed with cybernetic stuff. So Luther Manning becomes this character called Deathlok. And initially, he's a cybernetic military assassin. His creation, he was supposed to be a future version of what Captain America would eventually become. That was the idea. And there's another alternate version of Captain America later on from another alternate universe in Marvel called Killraven, Warrior of the Worlds, which is a takeoff of the War of the Worlds story from H.G. Wells, because that was in public domain. Big side note, sorry. But this is the Marvel stuff I know.
Yeah. Okay. So I got a question. The Mordok.
Modok?
Yeah. Comparable.
DC does have a character.
But he was in DC too, wasn't he?
No. Modok is a Marvel character. And there is...
The devil, the demon. No, I'm talking about the demon. Is that Mordok? No.
No, that...
That's what's the demon? Because it's a guy who turns
Etrigan.
Yes, there you go.
Etrigan the demon.
Yeah.
There's no variation except for the closest that you get for making a deal with the devil is going to be Ghost Rider. That's the closest Marvel parallel.
Okay.
But as far as MODOK is concerned, I'm kind of hard-pressed to find a correlation. There is a DC character with a gorilla companion.
Yes.
That fights the Doom Patrol.
Right.
But I can't remember the character.
How about... we'll talk about one of the villains.
Okay.
The gorilla that's in DC has the brain.
Oh, Gorilla Grodd.
Oh, and here's another one. Brainiac.
Oh, Brainiac is a wild character to deal with, right?
I would say comparable to Reed Richards, brain-wise.
Actually, I would say that the closest you come to is Ultron.
Really?
Yeah. Because they're purely automatons that have evolved.
Okay.
So in the case of Ultron for Marvel, the original character design for Ultron looks totally hilarious and totally bad. And then he becomes more of a humanoid looking character, but the face remains the same. In DC, Brainiac initially starts off as this computer component, and at some point he has this giant ship in the form of what looks like a human skull, but it's got like this kind of weird geometric thing for the cranium, and then he's got these weird little tentacles underneath it and stuff like that. Weird. It's like, all right, Brainiac, all right. But he actually has more of a humanoid, human-looking form, but it's green color. Right. And then I run into a problem with DC because there's a couple different variations of Brainiac to be
right.
With.
There is,
and one Brainiac seems to be more.
The early Superman, though,
he's
green.
He's green. Then he becomes the robot-looking dude.
Right.
Then he goes back to that.
Yeah.
But he's more of a sympathetic character. And I get lost because at that point you're dealing with the League or
League of Supervillains.
No, there's a League of Superheroes or something like that. It's supposed to take place in the 31st century or something.
Oh, okay.
Like that.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
I
don't know the name of it either.
Sorry, I'm old.
So what I wanted to is when we get towards the end here, we're going to do name some of the great.
I thought we were going to do like a fight, like who wins out one, then do like the.
No. I want to talk about and just list some of the famous cartoonists that have passed away.
Oh, okay.
Like Kirby and.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Definitely that.
Yeah. because
there's a number of them.
For you guys out there that are comic book enthusiasts, you'll know who we're talking about, or who Alan will be talking about because he can name them up like Dick.
I'm sorry, I can't help it. I'm a comic book nerd,
movie nerd, Star Trek nerd,
sci-fi 50s nerd.
He's a nerd's nerd.
I'm nerderific. How about that? Danger, danger, nerderific.
Oh my god. He makes the guys in the movie look bad.
I totally make them look bad. And I'm the silver fox, baby.
Oh yeah.
So with the cartoons, I hate to say cartoons because they're comics. I don't consider them cartoons. They're comics. And they are art. They are a special art that is totally different from cartoons.
Completely different.
There is some that are comics that are cartoons.
And some actual comic book artists work with animation. And that should be mentioned. So, yeah.
So, you know, even the old Archies, that was pretty good. The way they drew Archie and Veronica. Veronica and...
Easy, buddy. You're forgetting Betty.
And Betty.
Veronica and Betty were two of the hottest looking chicks. Ask one of our older friends, Steve Kopp, and he'll tell you which one he liked the most.
And not until later, they put them in bikinis.
Again, you can ask our friend Steve Coppin, which was his favorite.
That's what I'm saying is, like, we're talking art.
Okay, so comic book art.
Yeah, and it is art.
It is. And there's a number of comic book illustrators that are no longer with us, unfortunately.
And
they're fantastic. Now, for most people, they'll know this name, Frank Frazetta. By most accounts, he was a world-class painter of fantasy and sci-fi. Mostly right. Fantasy in most cases. Most people will recognize his artwork style immediately. He illustrated the very first cover of Conan, which is what Conan is known as being. Actually, even the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie is based off of his paintings.
And he did two movies, I think.
He did two movies.
Fire and Ice?
Fire and Ice, initially. And he actually was working with Ralph Bakshi, who was an animator at the right. time, and worked on that particular feature. You know, me being bad and just being old or whatever, I've never seen Fire and Ice. I've seen scenes of it. Yeah. I've seen illustrations of it. I know he was associated with it. But I've never watched the movie all the way through.
Right.
But there are a number of characters in that movie that are based off of Frazetta's work. Okay, that's the first one. Second one, you want to talk about great comic book illustrators? Al Williamson.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. A lot of Al Williams stuff would be incorporated actually into Star Wars, which he would actually go on to illustrate later on, not only in the comic book adaptation of The Empire Strikes Back, but the comic strip. There was an actual Star Wars comic strip that had Al Williamson doing the illustration and an author by the name of Archie Goodwin doing the stories. And this was a weekly comic strip of Star Wars. A lot of the Star Wars stuff that you see in the...
I didn't know that. A lot of people probably didn't know that.
Yeah, and so a lot of stuff that George Lucas takes from is based upon some of his strips, which were also based off of Williamson working on Flash Gordon, which originally is what Gordon. Lucas was basing his idea of Star Wars on. Okay, so Al Williamson, you're one of my favorites. I love you. I miss you dearly. Next one, Wally Wood. Now, Wally Wood goes back to during the same time as Williamson and Frazetta in the 1950s, working for a comic book company called EC Comics, or EC, or Entertaining Comics.
Right.
And that whole variation had some really wild stories of Two-Fisted Tales, Combat, Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay. Wally Wood worked on all these series, and he did some fantastic storylines. He also worked in tandem with a couple of other really great comic book illustrators in the same time frame. Jack Davis, who was working on at that time, Mad Magazine was the only thing that managed to outlast the McCarthy hearings during the Comics Code initiation. EC Comics was completely different from Marvel, or at that time, Timely, and DC, which was also known at that time as National Periodicals. Sorry, my comic book lore is pretty deep on this.
Well, I got to tell you that a few years ago, Mad Magazine was like, you could hardly find them, but now they are back in the magazine stands, which it's great.
Who's printing them? That's what I'm kind of curious. I don't know. Publisher is.
Yeah, but I still have Newman on the front.
Alfred E.?
Alfred E. Newman runs for president. Yes.
Oh, I got to check that one out. Alfred E. Newman, yeah, he was a character. So,
what, me?
Yeah. EC Comics. So, again, Wally Wood was another one. Jack Davis is another character that's gone off and left us. There are some other great comic book writers and or illustrators.
Well, Lee.
Who?
Stan Lee.
Stan Lee. I'm not going to mention the best one until last.
Right.
Richard Corbin, I believe, is no longer with us, unfortunately. He did some great illustration stuff. We still have some of our counterculture illustrators, such as Crumb, still with us,
yes,
which is great.
Oh, if you have not seen any of his work, just go online and look. It's great.
George Perez, which is another one. He was the best well-known for his work on the Teen Titans for the longest time. But I think the biggest one of all, and if there's a couple of other... Oh, Neil Adams. I almost forgot about him. Him and George Perez died within a week of each other.
Oh, wow.
Of cancer, each one of them. I never had the opportunity of meeting Neil Adams. I saw him at a couple shows here in the Northwest when he was here, you know, close to the end there, unfortunately. But the biggest one, and I think most people realize, is the writer slash artist, mostly artist, Jack Kirby.
Yes.
He's the king of comics, and there's a reason why they call him the king of comics. There's only one writer, illustrator comes close to his production, but Kirby managed to crank out so much stuff during his time as an illustrator for both Marvel and DC.
Right.
And as I found, he did a number of other illustrated jobs on a couple other things, such as Illustrated Comics Illustrated.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I found one. It's called The Last Days of Pompeii. I actually bought a copy of that. I just bought that one. You can see Kirby in it, but it must have been just a job for him at the time.
Yeah, okay.
But he's cranking this book out.
But he's cranking it out, right.
But Jack Kirby, to me, is probably one of the best well-known writer, authors, illustrators I've ever seen.
Now, it's either Prime or Netflix, they have a special about him, about what he went through and changing over his life about being an illustrator. It's very interesting. You got to watch it. It's just interesting what he went through. He went through tough times.
He went through some serious tough times, but he would draw and illustrate for anybody because what he was trying to do, from the way I understand it, is that he was just trying to put food on the table for his children. It didn't matter what he had to do. He just had to draw and write whatever he needed to immediately. It wasn't until the 1960s that he caught on fire, because here's a guy who created Captain America back with Joe Simon back in the 1940s, and they worked together for a long time, and then that book faded because after the World War, there was nothing for this character to fight against. I mean, it was a propaganda piece. Surprise. When you have a world war, you're going to have some characters do that. And at that time, that was the greatest thing to really influence the youth of the time. When I read Captain America, it's like, who is this, you know, flag-wrapped character? What the hell? And he uses a shield? Okay. But he could fling that shield like nobody's business.
Right, right. He ricochet off things. Yeah, back to him.
And I love the way Spider-Man even says it in the movie, in the Civil War. It's like, that doesn't even follow any aerodynamics. What are you talking about? Shut up, kid. Where are you from? Brooklyn. New York. It's like, right on. That was the only commonality I thought was hilarious in that movie. Kirby was an illustrator. He always considered himself a comic cartoonist. But the amount of work that he did over the years, and then towards the latter part of his years, I actually collected some of his stuff in the 1980s before he passed away. Destroyer Duck, which was for this comic book company called Eclipse. He was doing a couple of individual issues for that, and he had actually worked for another company back in the 80s called Pacific Comics, where he was doing his... He had this grand storyline for these great gods overhead kind of thing. So right. He started off with Thor from Marvel and Ragnarok and all that kind right. of stuff. And then he continued over into DC with his characters called the New Gods, which is a continuation of... Then he left DC, went back to Marvel for a short yes. time, right? The story called The Eternals was another extension of that. And then right. he went to work independently for Pacific Comics in the 1980s, doing his thing called Captain Victory and his Galactic Rangers, which is a continuation of the same grandiose kind of storyline.
Guardians. That sounds like Guardians.
Well... if you take a look at the way the story of the Guardians of the Galaxy comes up, the original group is vastly different from the movie that we know with Peter Quill. Right.
Yeah, totally.
But in the grand scope of things, the story that Peter Quill and his version of the Guardians were used as the fulcrum for what the early version of the comic book would use their and take their name from.
Okay.
It's a weird comic book time loop.
We talked about all the artists and stuff. You can tell when you see their art in a comic, you can tell.
There's a distinctive style of right. artwork that stands out. 1970s was a great standout because a lot of the older artists were starting to lose favor with the readership because right. they were kind of tired of looking at Kirby or whatever.
Yeah.
And so you had certain writers and illustrators. Oh, Keith Giffen, unfortunately, he's passed away as well. But he was one of these standouts that held on to some of those new styles of stuff, continued to keep reworking it in the whole comic book thing. But he was a fantastic writer. From what I hear, way off the wall, according to some of my comic book illustrators I know that still work in the comic book industry. You had guys like Frank Bruner, who initially reinvented a little bit of what Doctor Strange looked like. You also have P. Craig Russell, who, again, the character named Killraven. Had also done a Doctor Strange version, which annual that's really well-renowned from right. what I understand. I've seen it, but I've never read it. Then it isn't until you get into the 1990s and 2000s that you have a very more cartoony kind of character-based right. group of illustrators.
Well, the only ones that are those are regular, like your regular comics. Now, if you get the special editions, you know, we're talking like the $15, you know, more than that.
Oh, I can name some characters right out of that group.
But those are artistic. Those are dark. They're like
Frank Miller, Jim Starlin, Peter Lloyd. Anything with Alan Moore attached to it, you should totally read. Actually, I have a small group of guys I've just gotten together with recently that we're going to have a comic book club.
Oh, really?
So we have a small little list of different our top five favorites. Miller, Moore, a couple of other people, Mark Miller and or Warren Ellis and Garth Ennis. Neil Gaiman has been mentioned but has not been brought up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But there are reasons for some of that as well. But yeah. These are well-renowned writers of comics. Frank Miller is a great one for doing both illustration and writing. John Byrne is the closest I've seen to mirroring anything that Kirby came up with. His production during the 1980s, he was drawing three different comic books at the time. He was drawing the Avengers. He was drawing the X-Men. He was also working on Captain America at the time. The Avengers were being written by one of his good buddies, Roger Stern, who's a great writer. The X-Men with Chris Claremont. And then he was actually working with Roger Stern again on Captain America. And all these are also being inked by different inkers. So Byrne was able to pencil out page after page after page. And his production was pretty phenomenal at that time. So Byrne was hard to not see during the 1980s. Miller was just coming up with Daredevil. He had just been working with an inker named Joe Rubinstein for a little while. And then you had this guy named Klaus Janson come in and start working his inking work. And Miller had taken over the writing stuff. And that's when Daredevil really caught hold.
Alan is not AI, just to let you know.
No. Even though my name starts with an A. Don't believe it. Sorry. I am a...
He could be a cyborg, I could tell you that.
I'm a huge comic book nerd!
So we're going to... This is towards the end.
I'm a nerd! I admit it!
What I want to say is, like, go to your comic stores. For those people who have not been to a comic store, go. It is so interesting. Because anything you think you want to read is there.
Oh, and we've been talking about the mainstream of stuff. There is an alternate group of comic books out there.
Dark Horse. There's
Dark Horse. Again, Eclipse. Oni Press. Again, there's more subsequent small press groups of people out there. They've got some great books. And that's not even including the European stuff we haven't even touched upon. And that is a whole different thing.
If we do the Japanese one, it would be definitely an X-rated version.
Tentacle porn. There is a thing called that. And yes. And I don't want to even think about it.
So we won't even go there right
now. It makes me squirm when I think about it.
So this is the end. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
This is Comedy Potpourri. Bye.
Bye.